Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to the show, it's Real Talk. Panel full of open minds, giving you real thoughts. You always go and get the realness. But y'all entitled to opinions, don't get in your feelings. To further assess, breaking it down, we bring on an expert. Scroll through our history, here's some of our experts. May of 2013, marks the beginning. Passion and dedication, that was the engine. Shouts to Grip for producing the track. Pitched him the recipe, and he came up with crack. Back to this Real Talk, you should really check us out. Providing voices for the people, this is what we about. Bringing skilled and talented guests all from different places. All are welcome, different views, different races. Here's the top that's intriguing beyond. It is Real Talk Radio, the best ones doing. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of It's Real Talk Radio. We are back. We are here. We're in the building. I got my crew with me. I'm going to let everybody introduce themselves. I'm Tay Real.
Hey, it's Michelle.
Bobby, you all right over there?
Hello?
Yeah, what happened to Bobby? Bobby.
Is he on?
I don't know. Is his phone muted? Bobby.
Uh-oh.
Hold up. What's going on with Bobby?
Well.
You all right over there, Bobby? All right, well, we're going to see what's going on with Bobby. Well, tonight we have a great show. We have an intriguing show. And I'm excited myself because I got my little cousin coming on the show. Bobby, I think, he'll probably call right back. He must have had some technical difficulties. Yeah, I got my little cousin on the show, man. So tonight we're celebrating Black excellence. Now, you know, we've been talking about, you know, not only talking about the negative stuff that's going on within the world and within the Black community and stuff, but we want to focus on positive stuff, too. And this young lady is a shining star. I'm very proud of her. Michelle, if you will, you want to go ahead and get to this introduction so we can get her on?
Yeah, absolutely. I was impressed by her. And, like, we really have the pleasure tonight, you guys, of being joined by somebody super special at 22 years old. Kendra, she's highly accomplished. She has a super bright future ahead of her. She's been maintaining a GPA of 4.0. And she's a student at the HBCU Spelman College. And not only is she a student there, she's also the valedictorian of her graduating class. I actually just found a new article online about that. You guys need to look it up so you can find out more about her. But while we have her on tonight, we'll be talking about how she's climbing up the ladder of Black excellence. And, you know, there are so many people also who are doing that, but it doesn't get talked about much. And so we're just here to celebrate it and change the narrative so that the young, gifted, and Black community, such as Kendra, can be acknowledged and celebrated just like, you know, shows that are kind of showcasing other ways of living. We want to show that some people can really still be super, super upstanding and thriving young voices. And there's just a lot of them who are waiting to be heard. And, you know, she's just completed her fourth year at Spelman. And she's set to graduate with this class here in May. And due to the global pandemic, the ceremony is postponed. And that's so unfortunate. So we'll be talking to her tonight about that and how she is pursuing a PhD in African American Studies. She's the daughter of a pastor and a hardworking mother with a degree herself. Kendra is determined to excel both academically and professionally, but most importantly, help the community she comes from. So we are just really glad to have her tonight.
Let's get on. Hey. Bobby,
you made it back.
I don't know what happened. I heard y'all saying, you know, Bobby. I was like, hey, how you doing, everybody? You know, Bobby G. And but you not know me. I was like, wow. But I'm back.
All right, good. We can hear you and everything. All right, Kendra, we got you on. Kendra, you on?
I'm here.
Okay. What's going on? How you doing, Kendra? How you feeling, man? So proud of you.
Thank you, cousin. I am sleepy because this is past my bedtime, but I'm here.
What's your normal bedtime?
You know, I usually pass out sometime before 10. I'm pretty, I guess, old. My friends say I'm old because of my habits. So, yeah.
Hey, I mean, to do what you're doing, I think you would need to get that rush, you know, to get them brain cells ready to flow for that, all that hard work, man.
Right.
Yeah. I love sleep.
Me too.
I ain't mad at that.
I need that.
We might have had some fun, man. Let's get right into it, man. We might have had some fun. Let's get to it, Bobby.
All right. So, all right, Kendra. So, what was it like, you know, growing up in, you know, Baltimore?
Oh, it was a blast for me. I am convinced that I had the greatest childhood ever, to be completely honest. I have great parents who are hard workers and were dedicated to making sure that my sisters and I had the best upbringing possible. In addition to my parents, I have two wonderful siblings. I have an older sister who was 12 years my senior, so a lot of times she became like a second mom to me. But she was also cool, and she let me hang out with her friends, which only became a problem when I started thinking I was older than I actually was, and I couldn't go to certain outings, and I was hurt by that. Other than that, I had an extended, you know, village of people, you know, neighbors, church members, extended family who were all loving and supportive, who nurtured my interests, who always supported me no matter how crazy or wild my dreams may have seemed. I believe I received a great education through Baltimore City Public Schools. I had mostly Black women educators, which I found is a rare experience for students. So that is an incredible blessing. I was taught my history, which I think played an integral role in shaping my identity and my pride in who I am, and my confidence in self, because I realized I come from a lineage of greatness. So, yeah, I mean, you know, morning trips to Lexington Market, weekend visits to the Great Blacksmith Wax Museum and the Reginald Fluid Museum, you know, summertime, barbecues, sitting on the front porch eating crabs, you know, it was a great life.
Awesome. And it definitely takes a village. There's no doubt. All right.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Eating crabs.
Mm-hmm. Crabs are everything.
So we hear you are the daughter of a pastor. So can you tell us a little bit about how, like, I don't know, like, your faith and just having that experience kind of shaped you academically?
Well, my dad didn't become a pastor until I was, I'm about to mess up this age. How long my dad been a pastor? I feel like I was 11 or 12.
I think that was like 11 years. Like, I think 11 years.
11 years? Something like that. I think what made the difference growing up was that I had parents that didn't just, you know, talk a good game or were good at theology, but practically living as people of faith. And they provided, you know, great models for that. Just, you know, living a good Christian life. And I would say faith has kept me grounded. It has kept me believing, you know, in moments where I felt insufficient, I knew that I could tap into the ultimate power source. In moments where I felt weak, I knew that I had strength to continue. Where I was not capable, I knew that God was. So even though I still worried, there was ultimately no need to. And just trusting and believing in the process and knowing that even if things don't look good or don't feel good in the moment, that ultimately they will work out for my good. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I love that answer. Amen.
Thank you.
All right. So how have, you know, your mom, dad embraced your academic achievements?
My dad, both of my parents are proud. I just think they express their proudness. I don't know if that's a word. If it's not, it's going to be their pride in different ways. My dad is definitely more of a kind of like a verbal affirmation kind of guy. Oh, I'm proud of you. And he's also more emotional. He will cry at the drop of a dime. Okay. My mother, on the other hand, she's a bit of a tougher cookie. I can tell I make her proud with her smirk, but, you know, she'll make little snide remarks like, you're doing what I expected you to do. I gave you that intelligence. So it's just good to know that I make my parents proud, especially seeing how hard they work, particularly my mother, her consistent sacrifices to make sure that we had better and that our dreams became reality. So it's very rewarding to see them see the fruits of their labor.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm a parent myself, so I kind of get that. you're the middle child of three. And you spoke about your sister a little bit before. How has, I guess, having such a good sisterhood helped shape you into the young woman you are today? Like, what are some great lessons you learned from just, like, sisterhood?
That sisters are your, I guess, your best friends. I think probably the greatest lessons that my sisters have taught me are the value of relationship, the value of friendship. I think because of them, I know not to tolerate. I have high expectations of friendships, and I think that's why I've only ever had great friends. I think there was one bad apple one time, but I've only ever had great friends. I mean, I could speak endlessly about my older sister, who, although I didn't realize it, and I'm pretty sure she didn't know it, it's probably been my biggest role model. I mean, she started her college journey at Morgan State when I was 6 years old, and my first time on a college campus was at Morgan. My first time going to office hours with her, she exposed me to HBCU homecomings, and any knowledge that she was gaining throughout her experience, she shared with me. You know, she showed me what it was like, you know, to care for our mom, and so, you know, I would see her pay for our mom's grocery or pay for, like, our mom's bills, and I was like, oh, I want to do that one day. And just her tenderness and her sensitivity, just a great example of, you know, how to treat people, how to love, really. I think both of my sisters have shown me that.
Yeah, that's a really great lesson. So do you think those experiences on the college campuses kind of helped you decide what you wanted to major in and where you wanted to go to school?
My older sister definitely inspired me to want to go to a historically Black college or university after kind of getting a glance into her experience, you know, her time at Morgan and seeing afterwards, you know, the network that she has and going to homecomings and just, like, wanting that experience for myself. But how I ended up choosing my major, I decided to be a history major when I was in high school, and it was after I took an African-American studies class with this teacher. His name is Mr. Warren, and he's actually an East Baltimore native, and, you know, we clicked over the fact that we were both from Baltimore City. And up until that moment, I didn't really realize that I loved history, and I didn't realize that I could actually have a career studying history, writing history, teaching history. And it was, you know, taking this class that I realized that my love for history took root in my childhood. You know, I had a mother who made sure that we were exposed to the films that she was shown in her youth. So I grew up watching, you know, like Carmen Jones and Sparkle, you know, films of the Black exploitation era, you know, my dad and his love of gospel music. So, you know, I knew about, you know, Mahalia Jackson and the Clara Ward singers. I had a grandmama who would, you know, travel the world, and she would bring us back artifacts from her travels to the Ivory Coast in Africa, and who would take us to museums throughout the city. I had a Gammy who is now 100 years old, who would just freely tell us about her life in the 1930s in Baltimore, and, you know, her relationship with Billie Holiday, allegedly, still working to verify that's true. You know, and hearing about my grandmothers and how they navigated Black life in Baltimore back in the 60s, and even my parents' own experiences, you know, integrating city schools. And so I had this just all this history surrounding me and this interest that took root in my childhood. And so, yeah.
Right. Yes.
That's amazing, man. Wow. That is, you have, you know, you're 22 and you have so much education and knowledge and so much just experience and, you know, life experience already. That's great. So, but how far up the academic ladder do you plan on climbing?
Up the academic ladder, we will see. You know, I'm going to get this here PhD, hopefully. And right now my goal is to be a professor at a historically black college or university, preferably Morgan State. Morgan State, if you're listening and you're hiring in 5 years, I'm more than willing to be an employee. But I really don't know. I mean, I have visions and I have goals and I have things that I want to achieve. I have an idea of the impact that I want to have. And when I was younger, I had more of a clear idea of how I wanted to make sure my vision came to fruition. But now, you know, after seeing how life can just take you on a different path, I'm open to see how things will play out. So I can't tell you. I'm just, you know, I'm along for the ride. I'm willing to see where this goes.
Okay, awesome. All right, Michelle?
Yeah, so, okay, after looking at your resume, Sam, I was like, wow, this is really incredible, because I'm really interested in also, like, black history, because I'm just passionate about it as well. And so mm-hmm. I was excited because I was like, I really want to talk to her. You know, you're an expert. So my question specifically is, how did the Cold War Black leftist movement evolve, and what were the effects of those politics on today's Black people? So, like, if you could give me an example of how that movement affected us, I think that would be amazing.
Okay. All right. So, let's see. Without going on a rant, and I'm still, you know, I'm still exploring those questions in depth, but
yeah.
What I can tell you that other scholars have concluded that I – you know, sort of agree with, is so do you guys understand what the Cold War was, right?
Right.
But
yes, yeah.
Simply put, it was ideological warfare between the United States and the Soviet Union that waged between roughly 1950, well, actually 1947, I would say, until the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991. And in this ideological battle, two ideas were at conflict: United States democracy and Soviet Union communism. And in this battle, the United States and the Soviet Union were competing for, like, global domination, and the United States was trying to stop the spread of communism because, of course, they wanted people in Africa, Latin America, Asia, the Caribbean, all those countries that were being freed from their colonial rulers to adopt a democratic system. And so what you see happening domestically is this shift toward conservatism, because all politics that are kind of left of center became conflated with communism, because the Communist Party of the United States of America was dedicated to, like, leftist work. And yeah, you see this kind of attack on all forms of progressive, liberal, leftist activism. So the Cold War climate, particularly the years between 1950 and 1956, known as the McCarthy era, where there was, you know, aggressive attacks on leftists. Well, you didn't even have to be a leftist to be attacked. You know, you could be deported, you could be jailed. Some states even instituted the death penalty if you were suspected of being a communist or affiliated with communism. So in this moment, when black people were, you know, pushing for freedom, when black leftists wanted to progress their agendas without compromising, a lot of them ended up being silenced. You know, it was, you know, FBI surveillance. They were attacked in the media. Mainstream civil rights organizations such as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the National Urban League, leaders like Walter White and A. Philip Randolph shunned these organizations. And what you see birthed out of this moment is what we know as the civil rights movement, or what is, I guess, if we want to be more technical, the classic era phase of the civil rights movement, which starts in 1955 with the Montgomery bus boycott and culminates with the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And what happens because of the politics of this time is that you kind of have, like, this limited scope of activism. You know, we know the civil rights movement as being this movement that demanded, like, integration and voting rights. But what the civil rights movement really failed to do was uproot all of the inequities that existed in America's system. It didn't really challenge or it wasn't really revolutionary in that it challenged the uprooting of racist and sexist and classist systems. It was just demanding superficial changes to democracy to make America look better, as opposed to actually seeking fundamental change in society. And so I think what you see today, or certainly years after, is kind of this legacy of the failure, or what can be considered the failure of the civil rights movement. Why, if we fought for these rights back in the 50s and 60s, are we still seeing inequities today? Why, if,
like,
you know, we overcame Ahmaud and Breonna, why are we still seeing these public lynchings happening today? Well, I mean, honestly, that's just because, I mean, America may have changed superficially. They may have changed the law. We may not have signs that are evidence of racism that exists. You know, we may not see blacks hanging on lynching trees anymore. But this racism, this evil, this hatred is just taking new forms, and new forms that are more covert than before.
Definitely. I totally, totally agree.
Like I said, wow.
Yeah.
Right.
What inspires you to, you know, research a long past history, you know, as such a young, you know, as such a young person?
My specific research project, what inspired it?
Right.
Well, because I became a Mellon Fellow my sophomore year of college, so the Mellon Mays program serves as an early identification program for students in, like, the humanities, social sciences, and the arts who are willing to become college professors and earn PhDs. The whole goal of the program is to diversify academia by putting, you know, persons of color in higher education. And a part of Mellon was a requirement to do research, so it was research was not something that I necessarily came into naturally. It was something that I had to do in order to keep my Mellon check, in order to keep a good status in the program. But it actually ended up working out well for me because I did end up in enjoying my project. Initially, I was interested in studying the, like, political origins of, like, cultural movements. So I wanted to do a project where I compared the political origins of the Harlem Renaissance with the political roots of the Black Arts Movement. But as I was doing research, I realized that there is not as much studying of the Black experience between the 1920s and the 1960s. So I really wanted to focus on the 30s through the 1950s. And then as I was, you know, picking cities to study cultural production, I landed on Detroit and New Orleans and Boston and Los Angeles. I ended up liking Detroit a lot and being curious about what was going on in Detroit before the founding of Motown. And it was there where I was learning about Detroit's labor scene and, you know, the experiences of workers and also learning about the Cold War. I became interested in the experience of, you know, Black radical working people during the Cold War. So that's how I came up with my project.
That's really cool. I like that. Well, let me ask you, on a slightly lighter note, what's it like to be a student at an HBCU?
It is amazing on most days. And when it's not good, it's still good. I mean, I don't know. It's just, it feels like home. I mean, for me at least, when you find your community and you're just surrounded by these brilliant Black folks, you know, who are not all the same as you, because contrary to what people may believe, Black people are very diverse. We're not all the same. We may have similar experiences, but we're not all the same. But just seeing the beauty of Blackness and how diverse Blackness is, seeing Black students, you know, overcome whatever their personal challenges are and, you know, strive for greatness, how, you know, despite the obstacles that face them, the things that are against them in society, they're carving out their own space in this world and seeing how they dream. It's just, it's empowering on one end to be educated by Black professors. And at Spelman, I think all but three of my professors have been Black women. I can't tell you how inspiring it is to have women who have gone on to get the PhD, who are coming back working at Spelman, who are, you know, they know their content, they are sharply dressed, they are on it. I think they're the dopest people ever. To have people who see me beyond my race, who see me beyond my gender, who see me beyond my intellect, and they understand that my worth is not necessarily derived from that. It's great to be in a place where I'm not a token because I'm Black and woman and smart and from the inner city. It also allows me to be vulnerable in ways that I wasn't allowed to be when I went. I was in my predominantly white high school because I felt like it was a hostile environment, so I was kind of very guarded. And being in a space where I felt safe to be vulnerable allowed me to get to know myself better. It allowed me to come face to face with fears and insecurity. It allowed me to heal. I love HBCU experience. I love Fried Chicken Wednesdays and Fried Fish Friday. It is great to walk on campus on Market Friday with the DJ blasting all the hits from the 90s and people doing line dances. Going to HBCU is everything. I mean, it's not perfect. I don't want to give anybody the impression it's perfect, but it's pretty darn close to amazing, if not amazing.
Well, that sounds like the Black experience to me. So let me ask you, what is the most impactful thing you have heard a Black professor say?
The most impactful thing I've heard of, you got to think now, because what have my professor said to me? Well, if I'm going with something, wow, this is a hard question.
I'm sorry. I like to ask questions that make people think because then you just really get the real raw.
I'm trying to think of the most impactful thing because it's kind of hard to rank impact, at least for me, because I'm in this moment where everything is fantastic because, you know, I'm really nostalgic at the moment. Okay.
Just think of your favorite.
I remember now. One of my professors, Dr. Odari, she told me that one of her classmates told her this, and she wants me to remember this moving forward. She said, "Kendra, you have to have the confidence of a mediocre white man." And I was like,
"Listen,
wow.
Okay, Dr. Odari,
true."
Because she says you know that in any case you are greater than them, so it's no need to feel less confident than they have the audacity to be. Mm. So.
Well, right on.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Wow.
All right. Okay. So, what was it like?
And thank you
to
for
be...
that. Sorry, Bobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, Kendra, what was it like to be awarded valedictorian? I know you had to be, you know, you probably knew it was happening. You were definitely on the dean's list the whole time, obviously. So, how did it feel?
Honestly, I'm still in shock. I would like to say it feels great, but honestly, at the moment, it feels surreal. And I think the only thing that makes it somewhat, you know, a reality for me is the amount of support that I've been receiving via social media and the calls and the texts that I've been receiving from my loved ones. You know, even though it's something that I set out to do, well, not initially, because when I first came to Spelman, I was scared that I was going to flunk out of all my classes, actually. But after, you know, 4 semesters of maintaining my GPA, I was like, hey, I might actually be able to be valedictorian. Even though, you know, I said I was going to do it when I was a sophomore, it's still a shock that it's happened. So I'm shocked. I'm honored. You know, I'm surprised. But I'm surprised at most things in life. Like, is this really happening to me? Wow, this is crazy. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, let me see. Let's see here. All right, so how do you feel about not being able to go to, you know, unfortunately, due to this COVID-19, you know, a lot of people not able to go to, you know, the graduation, the physical graduation due to the COVID-19 outbreak. So how does that, you know, how do you feel? How does that affect you?
My heart breaks for those in the class of 2020, including my little sister, who are being denied, you know, the formal graduation festivities. And it's definitely heartbreaking because you witness the classes before you have the honors and all the honor and celebration. And, you know, you look forward to that, especially after all of your hard work. So my heart breaks for them. I think what's sustaining me is the fact that Spelman has made a commitment to make sure that the class of 2020 does receive a formal commencement, that we have the recognition that we deserve. And so I'm just holding on to that hope. You know, I know that I'm going to return to Spelman. I know that I'm going to be able to celebrate. I know that my friends and my family will be able to get together and we'll have a good old time. Of course, it's devastating, but I'm trying to remain positive, or as positive as I can be in this moment of global crisis.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Sorry you had anybody who was looking forward to graduation this year, this semester. My heart goes out to each and every last one of them, you know. So, but they still graduated. They still earned what they had. You know, the physical graduation, mm-hmm. you may not be able to do it, but you still did what you did, and you made that, you know, that milestone. So, congratulations to everyone, you know. So, awesome.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, I feel what Bobby's saying too, because I think, you know, this is a huge change for everybody because, I mean, mm-hmm. we've never been here before. So my
yeah.
question is, like, how is this affecting your long-term future goals that you had set for yourself, if it is at all?
Well, at present, you know, I don't have the foresight to know how society is going to change in the wake of this pandemic. What will be our new normal is probably the biggest question, but I don't know if it's going to have any major impacts on me in the long term. I know it's not impacting my stipend at Hopkins. Thank God I'm still getting paid. Praise Jesus. you know, even though it might change, you know, how we learn, you know, the culture of learning, we might be, you know, going to classes digitally, which, you know, not ideal for me. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to – it might change how we do things, but it's not changing what I'm setting out to do.
Awesome.
Yeah, because I was just like – you know, I was thinking about that too. Like, man, like, so many things was going on this year. So many people had so many plans and goals, and people wanted to go to prom and all of this stuff, and people just being, you know – deprived of that, it does suck. But the most important thing is staying healthy, you know. So it's
mm-hmm.
nothing,
right.
Nothing more important than that. So it's the right call.
Right.
You don't want to risk, you know, contaminating people and possibly some
mm-hmm.
more deaths, you know.
Right.
You know, just for a temporary moment, you know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bobby
yeah.
said,
you can have a party.
You can't take away what they have learned. What'd you say, Michelle?
Mm-hmm. I said you can have a celebration of that size. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the time
yeah.
you guys can make it your mission to say, we will come together to celebrate this achievement, you know? But, like,
mm-hmm.
right now we have to kind of shift. Everybody's having to shift a little bit.
And also,
yeah.
remember, without you, none of this is possible. So, in that, like, you know, to add on to what Tay was saying, your health is the most important thing. So without you, this is possible. You don't want to be in the hospital with COVID-19 and get put on the ventilator,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, you can have your own little celebration, you and your immediate people that you're with, your family, whoever you're around. You can have your own little celebration right for now, you know, until
mm-hmm.
you know, it gets better. All right.
Yeah. Now, Kendra, I ain't gonna lie. This is a question
mm-hmm.
I've been dying to ask you about that we never got to talk about. You ready?
Okay. All right.
What are your thoughts on Mr. 45, a.k.a. Donald Trump? What are your thoughts on this guy?
Some things I cannot say because... not politically correct. My thought, I am disappointed in, I can't say number 45 because I think he's being true to himself, and that all of the rhetoric, you know, the hate rhetoric that he spewed before he, you know, that rhetoric that gained him a following and in part got him into office, you know, he's being true to himself. I'm just disappointed that our electoral system has allowed such a man, such a bigot, to assume the office of the presidency. And if anything, it just proves how far we have to go. It's another example of white lash. I've heard people, parallel, this moment of, Trump and this turn to ultra-conservatism and, racialized violence, or what seems to be an increase of racialized violence, which it might not be an increase. It might just be the fact that we now have platforms that expose it more readily, to the period during Reconstruction, or after Reconstruction, rather, where it was a time of great white lash, where whites in the South were seeking to regain their power. It was, racialized violence became normal. Jim Crow became laws. You see the development of scientific racism, laws that are denying immigration into the country. So, I really think we're in that moment right now. I prefer not to talk about 45 because I don't want to give him attention, but he got to go.
Definitely agree with you on that. Let me ask you something else. The electoral system is set up with the electoral college. Do you like that? You cool with that? Like the popular vote doesn't determine the winner, but the electoral college and how many electoral votes the person gets based on the state, based on the state and how many electoral votes they get per state. Like, you like that? You like that? Or do you think it should be the popular vote? Because we know that if it was based on the popular vote, then Hillary Clinton would have been president.
So
do you like that? Well, some people say that because of the different number of people in some states way bigger than others, that it's better that way, while others, like myself, feel like, it should be based on the total number of votes. So what are your thoughts?
Well, okay, I have not done extensive research on the Electoral College, but what I do know about it, or from what I have read, my half-educated opinion, is that it's an inherently classist, elitist system that is outdated. You know, it was put into place way back when, I can't tell you exactly when, my mind is slipping, because the political elite were not confident that, white male, working people, white male farmers or whatever, whoever wasn't in their elite were capable of electing a competent politician to office. You know, we've evolved now. You know, our society is more literate. Definitely just because you're a working class person does not mean that you are dumb. I think working class people are more than competent of, selecting people who are capable of running our country, with dignity, with some integrity, and have some sense of what they're doing. So I think the Electoral College needs to go. People make the argument that it's been mostly successful because there have only been a few times in its history that the, Electoral College vote differed from the popular vote. But, if Bush and Gore were not enough, this definitely needs to be the last straw for this system.
Yeah, I totally agree. If they're gonna talk about the Constitution is outdated and they want to rewrite the Constitution, then what they really need to do is eliminate the Electoral College. To me, it just doesn't make any sense. The popular votes is really what matters, and then that's just a way for certain candidates to pretty much have their way, I totally just don't. They need to get rid of the Electoral College. It doesn't make any sense to me. But what do you think Biden has? Do you think Biden has what it takes to defeat Trump in the 2020 election?
I hope. I do not know. I'm still forming my opinions because, admittedly, I was not following this Democratic race closely because it was way too many candidates for my nerves. I could not deal. I hope Biden does have what it takes. I hope, whatever critiques that he's receiving, about not being vocal during this time, that he steps up and that he proves to the electorate that he is worthy of their trust.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so knowing all what we know now about the Electoral College and the popular vote and, you know, those campaigns like Rock the Vote and Get Out and Vote, how important do you think it is that young people, you know, like yourself, go out and vote?
I think it's incredibly important because I know that the presidential election, the last presidential election, was disappointing for, I think, a lot of people, particularly in, born in my year, my generation, around the same time, who, this, you know, this was our first presidential election that we got to participate in. And to see what happen is obviously disappointing, but our votes matter because our vote is our voice, because we do have a representative democracy, you know, so we literally elect the people who will be our voices. And I want to emphasize the importance of voting, not just during presidential elections. My favorite YouTuber, Julesy, often says this, you know, that local and state elections have a more of a direct impact on your daily life. And so you have to keep an ear out on what's going on in your city, in your town, and participating in it as well. Your vote is your voice. I had a professor at Spelman, Dr. Hyde, say, you know, when you don't vote, you silence your voice. You give up your right to have an opinion to what's going on. And, you know, as suckish as the system may seem, as inequitable as it may seem, I say vote and fight for what you're seeking to see happen in society.
Yeah. It's something else that I, you know, definitely wanted to ask you about. The unfortunate tragedy of Ahmaud Arbery. I wanted to get your opinion on that. You know, how did you feel about that case? Did you see the video? Were you able to even watch it? If you did watch it, like, you know, what were your thoughts? And I know you go to HBCU, and I know, you know, y'all pay attention to what's going on, and y'all talk about things. And I'm just wondering, what's going through your mind as you find out about this case and when you discuss it with some of your, you know, your friends and schoolmates and all that stuff? Like, you know, what are your thoughts? What's your thoughts on that situation?
Well, to answer your question, no, I did not see the video. It came across my timeline, but I did not want to watch it.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just, I can't believe that someone's death, you know, has been recorded. That's crazy. And I saw Bree Newsom. She tweeted that, you know, the watching us, you know, having access to these videos of these, you know, modern day lynchings and us tweeting about it or having conversations are modern day forms of, like, oh, I forgot what she called it. But don't you know how back in the day they would have lynchings and people would take limbs to remember the lynchings by? It's very disturbing practice. People would take an arm or, you know, a finger, and they would pose with the bodies, and they would distribute postcards. That, you know, the kind of response that lynchings get today is equivalent to that. And I do agree with that statement. I mean, the Ahmaud case, it definitely hits close to home because, you know, I did go to school in Georgia, although I was never really an ATLian. I did go to school in Georgia. I have a mentor who has three sons that are all athletic, who, you know, live in Georgia, and this could have easily been them. Honestly, what else can I say that it hasn't already been said? You know, we're tired, we're angry, we're devastated, because this is another life lost. You know, this is somebody's son, this is somebody's brother, this is somebody's friend who was taken because somebody felt that they had the right to just end his life. It's just, like, how many different times is this scenario going to play out before we get different results, you know? And why do people still see this as okay? You know, it's just very frustrating. It's very disheartening. It's very angering. It's honestly depressing.
Yeah, it's like trauma bonding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Because I was, you know, we was talking about this. Was that last week? I think we were talking about this. And I'm just like, I was going over like the all of the national news as far as black unarmed men and women that were killed by either a police officer or a white man that, you know, just feels like, you know, he's justified in stalking and, you know, like the George Zimmerman situation. That's like, we just see repeat over and over again, like, you know, feeling that in sense of entitlement, you know, like, what, like, I'll be wondering, like, wow, I can't imagine what that must feel like to be a white person and just to feel that privilege and that entitlement, that, like, the nerve to even approach somebody and follow somebody and to demand answers from somebody who's minding their business, taking a walk or taking a jog, and just, like, you feel like it's okay, you can just go ahead and approach that person or accuse them or make a citizen's arrest. Like, when I heard that citizen's arrest thing, I was done. What? I didn't even know what that was. I had to, like, what is that? Like, man.
And you gotta remember something. These guys, they're immigrants. And they're immigrants. They're not from here. They're immigrants. And they, like you said, that entitlement. They really think that this is, you know, their country. Like, they built this country. They feel like because of what their ancestors done, and, you know, the slavery, you know, because whenever somebody think of, you know, blacks, they think of slavery, like the past. But we go way, way before slavery. We go way back, you know, before slavery into other continents, not just Africa. You know, the Moors were all over, you know, so, you know, there was indigenous people here already in America. So anybody, you know, Christopher Columbus did not discover America, you know. Anybody
well, that's
believe
the
that?
Thing, though, like, but that's the thing is, like, that's what they do everywhere they go. Like, the formula is the same in every place they go to conquer. Same.
Right.
Kick the people to a reservation or kick them off their property and just take over and run
down.
Like king of the hill.
That was this.
So,
I mean,
no big surprise.
Yeah. Hey, you know, if we wind it down on time, Kendra, we're going to be letting you go in a few minutes. But before we let you go, we want to play a little game with you. You down for that, to play a little game?
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay, so let me explain the rules to this game. It's very simple. Basically, we're going to name historical figures within, you know, black history. And give a one-word response as to your thoughts on that person. Use one word to describe your thoughts, your feelings, or your admiration or whatever for this person or these people. And for the ones that you aren't so familiar with, you can just say past. I'm confident that it won't be too many that you have to say that, but just in case, it's okay to be like, pass, I ain't, you know, pass, and just move on to the next. And we just got a few names we're going to pitch to you, and you use a one-word response to express your feelings on that individual.
Okay,
so I think it's on Bobby.
Okay, Malcolm X.
Sexy.
I was not expecting that.
Rosa Parks.
Let's see. I know. What do I want to call Rosa? I'm looking for the word. I know the word that I want to use. I'm trying to find it in my mind. I'm going to call her, I'll use two words, Quiet Storm.
Okay.
Okay. I like that. Frederick Douglass.
Oh, God. Okay. to where it's native son? I think because I think about Baltimore. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, Harriet Tubman.
Mmm. Freedom.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good. I like that. Marcus Garvey.
Audacious. Okay.
Oh. All
right.
I hear that. I'm going to throw two to you this time. Rightfully so. Barack and Michelle Obama.
I see it, Uncle.
Okay. All right. Jesse Jackson.
Wait a second. Okay, wait. Okay, never mind. Let me just use positive words. Presidential race.
All right. All right.
Nat Turner.
Revolutionary.
George Washington Carver. Oh, you're a curveball.
Peanut butter. With a mustache. You had to cut it quite an iconic mustache.
I got one more for you.
Mm-hmm.
Alabaker.
Ah! Oh, wow.
All right, wasn't stuck in that one. Mm-hmm.
No, okay. See, you say a single word, and I have these complex ideas about.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Alabaker. I mean, you gotta use a little more. That's okay. Go ahead. Do your thing.
Let's see. I want to call her amplifier of the voices of the younger generation.
Awesome. You want to elaborate a little bit? Because that's the last one we got from you anyway. You want to
okay.
You want to elaborate a little bit? Because so many people don't really hear her name mentioned that much when it comes to when people talk like black historical figures.
Mm-hmm.
You want to elaborate on Alabaker a little bit?
Oh, for sure. Now, fact check me, because I might be a little rusty here. But Ella Baker, of course, she was a civil rights activist, and she was, I want to say she had some kind of administrative role in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which was conference or council, SCLC. It was an organization that was founded by, some Southern preachers. And I know Ella Baker got disenchanted with the organization, and so she ended up leaving. But she played a huge role in the founding of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, which, kind of that black power is birthed out of this organization. And her approach to leadership was really allowing the students who were a part of SNCC to step up and be leaders. She wasn't seeking to control the movement, but more so seeking to support them in what their freedom dreams were. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
That's dope, man. I want to learn more about it, because I just now, when I knew we was bringing you on, I was just doing some digging and stuff, and I just now kind of got familiar with how myself. I was like, oh, man, that made me start thinking, like, man, let me start, digging. We have the internet, and we have right at the palm of our hands, without wireless devices and stuff, we have the ability to research stuff and fact check stuff.
Exactly.
And just, we can check these historical figures. You don't need a teacher in front of you to say this is your home assignment. Like, why not learn more about, our past and people that helped us to get to where we are now as a nation of people. You know what I mean? So that kind of intrigued me, and knowing that you was coming on intrigued me too, knowing everything that you got going on and how much of an intelligent young lady you are, which I'm very proud of you, I was like, man, that made, inspired me to like do a little digging and looking into some things. I was like, oh yeah, man, I forgot about this. Well, I never knew that,
Yeah. Question
for y'all.
She worked with so many people. Like, she worked with Thurgood Marshall, Philip Randolph, Martin Luther King Jr.
Not Philip Randolph.
Diane.
Sure did. She did, Martin Luther King.
You know, yeah. Stokely Carmichael, Rosa Parks, you know, Bob Moses. She worked
with
so
Rosa Parks too, yeah.
Yeah. So she did a lot, man. She was definitely a civil rights and human rights activist as well. So, yeah.
Have you guys ever heard of Pauli Murray?
What was that?
Have you all ever heard of Pauli Murray?
No.
I would suggest. Well, Pauli Murray, she was born in Baltimore in the early 1900s. She was a civil rights activist. She was a lawyer. She was behind the scenes in planning the sit-ins. The sit-ins that happened at Howard University or that involved Howard University students that were organized in the 1940s, you know, over a decade before the sit-ins with the NCAT students in 1960. I believe she was like the first Episcopalian priest. She was a very dope woman, and if you do not know about Pauli Murray, I suggest you look her up. Especially, you know, I don't know if all y'all Baltimore natives, but if you want to learn more about, you know, some awesome people from Baltimore, I suggest you dig into that. And her later life becomes interesting, especially, you know, her contention with those who are part of the Black Power movement, because she ends up becoming a professor. So, yeah.
Can you tell us how to spell her name?
Oh, yeah.
Text me her name for sure. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. I heard. Would you like me to text it or spell it right now?
Yeah, well, Michelle just asked. Michelle, I was asked.
Okay.
I think.
Her name is spelled Pauli. Her last name, Murray, is Murray. There's actually this pretty fascinating book on her called The Firebrand and the First Lady. Because she started writing letters to Eleanor Roosevelt, and they forged this kind of unlikely friendship. And so there's this whole book that kind of documents how their friendship formed through letters. It's pretty thick, but it's a good read.
Okay, that sounds like something I would love to read. Thank
you. She became a lawyer and women's rights activist. Okay.
Yeah, I'll definitely
look into that. Yeah, she was born in
Baltimore.
Maryland.
Go ahead, Bobby. I'm going to cut you off. Go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah, yeah. No, see, I was just saying she was born in Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all put me on game, you know. Shoot, by all means, man, educate me because I definitely want to learn more, mostly when it comes about, you know, when it comes to, you know, Black history. You know, I definitely, you know, want to be fed some more. You know, some more knowledge, man. Like, I want to get more familiar about, you know, past iconic figures that helped us to get where we are. I think that's very important. Whatever I learned, I'm going to pass it down to my little one, you know. So, for sure, by all means, you know, we know school teaches some things, but school ain't going to give you everything. Some stuff you got to dig into the archives and kind of on your own, just kind of like, you know, go for what you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not going to give you that.
And,
yeah, that's why I like the HBCU colleges, because you're going to learn more of your history, you know, not his story, your story. So,
right now, I'm sorry, y'all, I was just going to say I like it too, because as a mom right now trying to teach, you know, history at my house, like we had a question today on, you know, what's the Supreme Court case that really affected society? So I had my son researching, like, that's not something he would have been doing in class, you know, looking up all these really great cases that affected our community.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to get those moments when my child gets a little older and really start to, you know, talk about stuff like that. Well, let me ask you this, because there are white students that go to HBCUs, right? Like, you had white students in Spelman, right? There were no white students at all?
Let's see. So, yeah, there are white students do go to HBCUs. There are actually some HBCUs that are now predominantly white, which is interesting to me.
Hey,
however, at Spelman, really? Yeah, there's a couple of them, which I think is absolutely fascinating. But at Spelman, I only knew of one white student. The majority of our student population was black. And when we had international students, you know, we had, of course, black international students, but we had students from Japan. So I think they would fall in the category of Asian. They're white professors.
Yeah.
They're just not so much white students, or at least not so much at Spelman. At Clark, you have a more of a Middle Eastern population, particularly in the graduate school. There was a white boy at Morehouse. There have been a couple white boys at Morehouse that have gotten notoriety. The current guy at Morehouse, he's the subject of this Vice documentary about, I guess, being white at a historically black college, which caused some, controversy on our campuses. But, yeah.
What are the thoughts that go through a person's mind when they decide they want to attend an HBCU? Like, you feel like it lives up to it, you know what I mean? Like people get that experience that they look for when they go there. Like you feel like basically like I'm a student that's in high school right now that might be listening,
mm-hmm.
and like they're wondering if it's like they got choices. They're wondering if the HBCU is going to give them that cultural type of experience that they want, and they got options
mm-hmm.
of other places too. Would you say yeah, it's worth it? Like you should go to the HBCU or maybe it's not as what people start thinking until they get there.
I went to Spelman because I wanted to be in a black space, because I wanted to be surrounded by mostly black women, because I wanted black professors, and Spelman delivered on all of those things. If there's a student listening seeking, that kind of experience at HBCU, I would definitely encourage them to go, as long as they can afford it, because, school is expensive, and at the end of the day, get that degree with as little bit debt as possible. I feel like my HBCU experience was definitely worth the investment, and I'm definitely already seeing returns on that investment. So, yeah.
And see, I like that because, you have a lot of black people who've been to, mostly schools that were predominantly white. And just not only that, just coming up, just living in certain areas where all you see is white people who own businesses, who's running, communities and stuff. And so when you got a black person in a HBCU, a black college, and you're looking at black professors and doctors and stuff with PhDs, and you respect black people, that's a good thing, because a lot of black folks don't respect black men. They look at black people in certain positions. They look at white people as the people of, they respect them. They look at them like they always see them running these businesses. They want to go interview with a white person, and, they feel like, they need to be accepted by the white. And that's, I'm just saying, like, I feel like that's an issue with a lot of blacks, even Africans. They look like they praise the white men in Africa. Look what's going on in Africa. Even now the Chinese are in there, taking over and, all the stuff going on and bringing in their people and not hiring the people of the land, who's from there, it's like they're just opening up shop for their people and just making the blacks the consumers as usual, taking their position, in a black country. So that's why I like when blacks respect blacks, and I don't like to see blacks hating on black people. I can't stand that. When we go through so much in society with everybody else hating on blacks, cops gunning us down, our own people are trying to, screw us, and everybody's trying to come at us, including our own people, so that's not cool. So that's why I like Yeah, I respect blacks who try to show love and support their black people, support their businesses, and just respect the blacks that are doing the blacks that I'm just the blacks that are doing what they should be doing. You know, those blacks. You know, so hats off to you, Kendra, for your background, what you've been doing. So that's great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And we know it's past your bedtime, Kendra. So we're going to let you get out of here. But, hey, man, again, I'm so proud. I think you deserve a round of applause.
Not a flat track. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I think you deserve that, you know. It was a pleasure having you on here. I can't express enough how proud I am of you, and I want you to definitely keep me updated with, you know, your progression and milestones. You know, I'm going to be right there with you every step of the way.
For sure.
It's definitely been a pleasure, man. And, you know, we're going to make sure that we keep up with each other, you know. And, yeah, it was great having you on, man. Hope you had a good time.
Thanks
hope you enjoyed
for having
yourself.
Me.
Also, let the, like, you know, let your people know, like, as far as any friends, family, or anybody that might wasn't able to listen because, you know, it's late and some people was, you know, ready to get out of quarantine and wanted to go out. It's Friday night. People that got their stimulus checks, all types of stuff going on right now. You know, so we know not everybody would be able to, you know, make it to the live show. But just let them know if they missed it, that link I sent you, all they got to do is click it. And they can hear the whole show from beginning to end. You know what I mean? Nobody missed a beat. Anybody that's on the line right now that might have, you know, caught it at a later time or something, anybody, like, you know, all they got to do is click the link and they can just, you know, hear the whole discussion, which I feel as though was a great discussion, you know. And, you know, it was a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
You have to come back and we got to talk about anti-blackness and internalized white supremacy.
Yes, if I can just add something real quick, like, Kendra, I just want to reach out to you and talk to you a little bit because I've been working with this girls mentoring group, and I know for sure that they're always looking for people to speak to, you know, girls. You know, I know some girls personally who need mentorship and who are looking for, you know, somebody to talk to. So, I mean, if you're not looking into that for yourself, you definitely should be. And I would love if you could, you know, come and speak to some of these kids. Like, you're such a light, and I think you need to share that.
Thank you. I would love to. I'd love to.
I'll definitely connect you guys for sure. For sure. That'd be dope. It'd be my pleasure. Yeah, I'll definitely connect you guys. Kendra, it's been great. We're going to let you go and get your beauty rest. And,
thank you.
Keep up with me, all right? Very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
All right. So, all right, crew, we're going to get ready to get out of here. Before we get out of here, if you just want to, you know, briefly, you know, just go over, like, you know, what was y'all thoughts on tonight's guest, my little cuz, you know, and, you know, because, you know, it's rare that, we, you know, typically when we're on here, we're talking to people our age, you know, and, you know, that's just a young black woman that's, you know, doing some great things. And I just like to be able to get the perspective things from a young person, especially a young black person. You know what I mean? Like, what was your thoughts? Let's start with Michelle. We'll go ladies first. Like, what was your thoughts on tonight's discussion and on Kendra and everything?
Well, I thought it was really great because I like the fact that she's young, but she's determined to go out and get it. And it just seems like she has a really great foundation. And like I said, I mean, there are kids right now who really need to speak to somebody who's in their age group that they can sort of relate to. You know, and I think it's important that we highlight young people who are doing their thing so early because it takes a lot to get out there and say, this is me and I'm going for what I know. You know what I'm saying? So I really appreciate that about her. And I think that it was right of us to have her on our show because she just blessed us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of that stuff she was saying, I was like, man, I ain't schooling me. I don't, you know, I know my little bit of stuff, but sheesh, I mean, it's like, you know, reading a history book with this young lady, man. You know?
Absolutely, a wealth of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, you want to share your thoughts with us before we get out of here?
Yeah, oh, man, that was, she was amazing. I thought I was in Selma for a minute listening to some historical stuff. You know, she was really sharing some stuff that I didn't even recall or remember. And then some things I did, but she had it down. Everything is still fresh in her memory banks. And, man, she was just a pleasure to listen to. Very educated, and she's focused, she's determined, and she needs to speak to a lot of the people in her group, and even older and younger, like really anybody. She can share something with everybody, every and anybody. So she's that is just amazing, man. That was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I think she needs to share with all of these. There's so many people looking for people like her. You know what I mean? So many.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you have a gift like that, you have to be sharing it.
Really? Yeah. Definitely, especially with our people, our young, our youth.
Right.
Because
that's who needs it.
They need it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I have to say, man, like, I'm also proud of y'all, man, because we're a new assembly crew. We're a new assembly crew. Like, this is like our, what, third, fourth show together? And y'all handled that thing, you know what I mean? Like, y'all handled that thing. We all are in remote locations. I'm in Baltimore, Bobby G is in New York, and Michelle is in Houston, which is a whole different time zone. And here we are, three different places, you know, and putting this thing together. We're not in the room with each other. We can't go off of eye contact or nothing. And here we are winging it. And for the most part, I thought it was great, and it's only going to grow from here. So I'm very proud of my team, you know. Very proud of you guys tonight. You guys are great, man. I can't do this without y'all, so I just had to stay on air, like, to let y'all know that I definitely appreciate y'all. You guys are great podcasters. I couldn't ask for a better team.
Oh, man, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate that. I will say this, and you put it together. You know, you had us ready, prepared. You set up the Word doc, so that we can know our cues and when to come in, all of us, all three of us. So that was amazing. That was great. And we probably need to do that every week. And we need to do what we did last week, like, you know, earlier this week, talk about what we're going to prepare. Prepare before we actually, a couple of days before, you know, we go on and make sure we prepare ourselves and be ready for it, like how we did tonight. That was awesome. And also, we also was staying in contact behind the scenes on the, you know, WhatsApp, you know, making sure, you know, keeping in touch, bypassing certain questions. Because even, like, I heard, like, a question I asked her, she answered, like, the next question. So I was like, boom, I got back. You know, so I had to let, you know, you guys know. So, you know, it was, I think you was up next, Michelle. So that was great.
Yeah. So what Bobby's trying to say is our production is on.
There you go.
Period.
He was on the money.
Yeah, I appreciate the acknowledgement. Yeah, thanks. And last thing before we get out of here, man. So for those who are listening, just know that, you know, we're going to be, as we're, you know, continuing to grow, we're going to be looking to have guests on. We would love to have other guests, definitely young guests. We definitely encourage and welcome young guests to come on and, you know, share some insight, you know, with us, what they got going on, great things, accomplishing things. You don't have to be young, but, you know, it's just always great, like, you know, to see young people and what they're doing, and us as older people just, sitting down, bonding, connecting, because they are the future. That's very important. But we're definitely looking to have more interviews, more guests, more discussions. Be looking forward to that. So if you're listening and you got something going on that's worth talking about on air, definitely hit us up. It's realtalkradio@gmail.com. Thank you for everybody that was tuning in, everybody that was on the phone lines, you know, everybody that's showing support. Thank everybody. Shout out again to my little cousin Kendra, and all she's got going on. Shout out to my team. This is It's Real Talk Radio. We will see you next Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We are out of here. Good night. Peace out.